26, 2017, is now called to order. We have regrets from Councilors Gil Johnson and Councilors Raymond Fisk. Are there any changes to the agenda this morning? I have none. A motion to approve the agenda would be in order. Moved by Councilor Muse, seconded by Deputy Mayor McLeod. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of the question? It is unanimous. Thank you very much. We will now move on to presentations. We have Staff Sergeant Derek Smith. If you please come forward. He's going to give us an update on our CMP information.
Morning, Your Worship. Thank you for inviting me. I don't know, I've sent some reports. One thing that I haven't sent to council, which I was going through today, and I think everybody in council will remember that back in, through the winter months in February or March, we had a public consultation meetings both in Liverpool and Caledonia. And we used that to draft our, what we call our annual performance plan, which is our guiding document for our activities this year. And so out of that, out of the public consultation, the consultation that we had with council one day, we had developed a plan, and so I'll just go through some of that with everybody, so they have some sort of an idea of where we're, what our goals are for this year. So the first one, it comes under road safety, and our mandate is to reduce serious and fatal collisions by 3%. That's a provincial directive that comes from, down through discussions with the province through our headquarters. So as part of our mandate, what we've asked, or what I require of my members, is that we have proactive education campaigns. And what I had asked for was to go from 5 proactive education campaigns the previous year to 17. Now, the numbers I'm going to quote you are up till June 30th, which was the end of the first quarter. Our second quarter is going to end this weekend, so I don't have all the numbers for the most recent quarter. We exceeded that already, and we exceeded that through the deployment primarily of our, the radar trailer that we had down here for several months. The radar trailer, we share that with Bridgewater Town Police, and that was purchased through the So Shore Safe Communities Program. And so we share that with them, and so we received very positive feedback from that. There is a way to extract data from that. I would like to sit here and tell you that we've been able to do that. We're still trying to figure that out. Initially, one of our computers, or the, our normal computers in our office won't run the program because of all the security settings that we have on our computers, but we had a standalone computer in our office that we had to replace, and we've replaced that, but we're having trouble trying to get the data back off of the jump drive that we took, plugged into the instrument. So I'm not 100% certain that we're going to be able to make that work, but we're trying. But long story short, is between the months of April and June, we had that deployed at least 18 times in various areas, and I think everybody in council is aware that we had sent messaging through council to ask if you have areas of concern raised by your constituents to identify them, and we'll do our best to get the trailer there. And the other thing that we've asked is that we increase our summary offense prosecutions from 283 to 350. And so that would be your typical, you know, stopped on the side of the road, issued a ticket. Now, what I've asked my members to do is, our members work a block of 5 shifts generally, and I'm looking for 4 documented self-generated contacts in the run of a block of 5 shifts. Now, a self-generated contact could be a checkpoint, could be a roadside screening device test, that would be the alcohol sensor, a checkpoint, and/or stopping somebody and writing them an actual violation ticket that's going to cost them some money. So if they do that successfully, then they should come up with 5 tickets a month, basically 5 prosecutions a month, I would suggest. We're not in a quota game. We don't, at the end of the month, load up on tickets or anything like that. But basically, what it comes down to is our members should be able to see 1 ticket-worthy offense in every block of shifts. Now, like I say, that may or may not happen. Some months or some weeks it doesn't. But generally, overall, that should happen. And that will, we want to have a robust road safety campaign, because the ultimate goal is obviously to change behavior so we don't have people ending up in serious and fatal collisions. So we had 76 tickets written in the first quarter of the month, the first quarter of the year. The second thing that we had was crime prevention and crime reduction. And that again was a 3% reduction. So this year what I wanted to do was initiate that through our continued bed check program and checking offenders. We're looking for 50 bed checks, and we're on track for that. A youth advisory committee meetings, and that's, we wanted to have, and this was certainly something that was raised with us through the region, but to engage our youth. And so Constable James has been tasked to deal with that, and he's underway with that now. We haven't had any meetings yet, but the school year has just started. We wanted to wait till the start of this year. Media campaigns targeting emerging trends, one of those would be, I think everybody's probably familiar with, we had a lot of thefts from motor vehicles at the early part of the summer. And whatnot. So Constable James has done some media campaigns on that. About all those were typically from unlocked vehicles parked in somebody's yard. Yes, you should have the right to leave your vehicle unlocked in your yard. Absolutely no question. But unfortunately, the reality is that some people at various times of the day were going through and helping themselves to the contents of people's vehicles. Lots of times it wasn't very much, but we are missing some wallets, we're missing some cell phones and whatnot. So those add up in a hurry for people, and so it's not a small problem. We engaged our crime analyst at the time for those to see if, to target predictive analysis trends to see if we could come up with some assistance that way. The other thing is, I think that those that probably were in council before would remember when we had the crime analyst here and they talked about their ComStat reports. And so every month I get a report on what's going on, where we fit in the grander scheme of things over our previous year and previous month for various property related crimes. Based on that, if there's anything that's identified to us as an emerging trend that obviously we don't see on the uptake, then we'll have develop an action plan. And like I say, the only one that we really had that I saw out of that of any real significance was the thefts from our motor vehicles. And we changed some patrol times around and whatnot. Those have seemed to have dried up. I'd like to say that it was because of the change in patrol times, but I don't think I'd be honest with you if you believe that. So that is on that. Cyber crime, we're going to continue with our communication strategy and programming on that. One of the things was that we were heavily dealing with the fraud presentations through our senior safety coordinator and Constable James. And as you know, our senior safety coordinator that we had last year, the Honorable Kim Masland, has now left us and on to better things. There is a new one hired. We're in the process of doing the background checks on that person, which is sort of out of our control now. That goes into our security section, and they run all sorts of checks. I'm not sure what the time frame is on it now. So we are missing the senior safety coordinator, which has been a huge void for us. We're spending a lot of time now on a couple of particular files that are difficult. And then the other thing is our connections with our First Nations people. So what we're trying to do is have 4 proactive events, meetings, and functions with our First Nations peoples. And in the first quarter, we didn't. We had something up right away in July. We had a bicycle rodeo up in at the Wildcat Reserve. Very, very well received. And we've got a couple other irons in the fire there. The other thing that comes as part of the annual performance plan is we also have a what we call unit level quality assurance. That's where we go and self-audit various areas of our activities. And this year we had two of them. One of them is quality of investigations, and that's specifically related to sexual assault investigations, missing persons, and sudden deaths. So we're going in and reviewing samplings of those to see that and comparing them against our policy manual. Once we do that, we see where we have gaps, we address the gaps, and then we review it again. And we're just in the process of doing the review for this quarter. But overall, so that was one of them. And then the other one that we were did a specific one on is violence in relationships. And so those were the two that we canvassed this year, or that we're canvassing. Long story short, we had a few gaps, nothing too serious, but we're not hitting all the boxes that we need to hit. So we're in the process of a second review right now. So that's what's driving our boat for 2017, 2018. It would be my intention, this winter, before we get into to redo that whole process of meet with public consultations in Liverpool and perhaps Caledonia again. I know we're very well received in Caledonia. If there's other areas, as well as then have another meeting with council to discuss what your priorities are, and as we come try to create a document taking everything into consideration and, like I say, give us some focus for next year. So I don't know if there's any questions arising out of that itself.
Yes, Councilor Fancy.
Yes, going back to the senior safety coordinator, what I'm hearing is that the person who's applied is not going to be in the Liverpool area.
The person that is the successful person resides in Bridgewater, as far as I know, and it doesn't reside in Queens County.
That's always going to be a concern for me, because as we saw with Kim, there was a lot of things that don't happen between 8 and 4.
Yep.
So how will that then, how much will we lose from that?
Well, all I can tell you is that I can, Kim Masland got a lot of phone calls from us, not between 8 and 4. So it would be my hope that this other person will, be responsive as well in that regard. I know the council's heard me say this before. Kim Maslin leaves some pretty big shoes to fill in that regard. I'm optimistic and hopeful. Obviously, with training and whatnot, we'll see where our new candidate, ends up. But I know that the selection board seemed very high on her.
Along with that, with the monies that she will receive, is that what are we going to be a 2-3 day week? What are you looking at?
My understanding is right now it's a 2 days a week. We would like to have that expanded. I do think that there is, I can tell you that perhaps the former senior safety coordinator is in a position now that's going to raise that issue at a higher level to maybe see if there's some other fundings that are available, but we're going to have to give her a chance to do her thing. But my own personal opinion is that that's an issue that's not going to go away, and it's only going to expand in the, as we all get older. So.
Deputy Mayor McLeod.
I'm on the senior safety board, and was in this meeting yesterday. But we understand that the applicant is very well qualified, and the optimum would be to have that person from Queens. She's very flexible and would consider moving here if the opportunity arose. And but a 2-day-a-week job really wouldn't qualify somebody to move, but I'm sure that something can be worked out if it's expanded.
Right.
And it's all about revenue, and it's all about the need in our community. And I know Kim went above and beyond that need, and I think a lot of those times that Kim spent hours with the program can be dealt with more constructively with other resources. But, and I know social services and yourselves as well, I mean, she dealt with a lot of those things, took it upon herself, because that's the kind of person she was, or is. But I think we can be comfortable in the fact that once this transition period happens with this new person, then I think we'll get more information and be comfortable with having that person. And it's not unusual if somebody from Queens County was a safety coordinator in Lunenburg County for years, so it can work.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, really, it does come down to really knowing the learning curve, to know what's available right here, and the who's who in Queens County that you can make the phone calls to. And I mean, I've always maintained I don't have to know the answer to everything. I just have to know who I can call to get the answer. So, and so no, I.
Councilor Fairley?
One of the things for us as a council, I believe, a priority is littering. And I don't hear that conversation happening and what your priorities are. So I'm just wondering, because what happens is, as we go through, none of us like it. It just keeps getting worse. And then April comes along, it's Earth Day, we jump all over the bandwagon, and then it kind of disappears again. So not the litter, just the education. So I'm wondering what your strategy is for that, and how does that fit in your mandate?
This year we didn't include a littering component. Just on a side note, I can tell you that in the month of August somebody did get a littering ticket in the town. But that can be rolled into our education because typically a lot of that comes under, you know, people littering from motor vehicles, I think. I mean, obviously there are other people that are just walking and throwing, but I mean, when you're driving the roads, I mean, lots of times you see the byproduct of it, no question about it. So that can be rolled into our education campaign. But like I say, this year we had it in last year, and I took it out this year to try to focus on a couple other things. But I would say that we could, as far as the educational piece anyway, I would say that's where it could come in at, under this. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, not really. I wanted to have a better feeling that this was being addressed, because we've all addressed it in whatever way we can in the past, and the problem just keeps getting bigger, and somewhere in this province there must be somebody that's having a successful campaign on littering, because it just seems like we have moments where we have campaigns, we have, you said you've laid a charge, so that's 3 in 10 years, but that's not impressive compared to the amount of garbage that we're still seeing. So I guess we're all kind of looking at how that's going to change. What is the starting point to change that and turn it around? And in my mind, it is about laying charges and lots of charges to people. And if that's a problem, then we have to look at other ways to address the bigger picture. So I think it's very important, and it should be a priority. And I can't imagine the public didn't talk about it in their public sessions. I know the council certainly didn't.
To the best of my recollection, it was not raised once in the public meetings. I don't have the notes from the public meetings with me at the time. But it's a challenging thing to lay a ticket for unless you have people that are witnessing it and prepared to come to court. In all the cases that we've had so far, it's been cases of our members' observations that have led to that, so from that aspect, it's that's one of the challenges in it, is that, you know, and some people see it. I think, obviously, some people must see it. Obviously, there's a mindset amongst a certain portion of the population. It is, I mean, I see in the news all the time, and I guess maybe because I'm a little attuned to it, but if various communities or various councils attempting to deal with littering. It's not unique to Queens County by any stretch. But that doesn't make it right. I don't want you to understand that. I don't think that that makes it any more right than anything else. But so it is a challenge, no question about it. But without public coming to us, because we're not going to be in the position to be necessarily, like say, when our members see it, they're going to do something about it. There's no question about it. And because they understand the significance of it to this council. And so, like I say, this last case was, you know, in the month of August, was certainly a, you know, a result of that. So.
Councilor Kelly.
Yeah, I want to go back to the 3% decrease in serious and fatal collisions. So you talked about the radar trailer, and we've seen that quite a bit. And I really appreciate you bringing that down to Queens County and having it was popping up everywhere. So the fact that you haven't got any data from it yet, but you're attributing you have had your 3% reduction, and that's basically because the trailer is just there.
No. We haven't. Those numbers will all come at the end of the fiscal years, whether or not we're down within the 3% reduction. I can tell you that obviously, clearly, is last year we had a fatal collision. This year we've had a fatal collision, prior to though, and there was a fatal collision 2 years previous. I think it was that was before my time. We're not. I'd like to say we're doing better, the fatal collision, the two previous fatal collisions that we had, one of them we have charges laid because we have reason to believe, like say that, and I don't know where that is in the process, so I don't want to. I think that's coming back to court here shortly. The one that we had last year down in Eastport Edway, we don't know what caused that. So that's it in a nutshell. I mean, we've had a traffic analyst in to examine the scene, and we can sit and speculate as to what might have caused that, but it would be just, I mean, we know what happened. We don't know why it happened. And so that's pure speculation. And the most recent one, we're still reviewing all the circumstances of.
So what are you attributing the radar trailers to?
That's to help us ultimately, hopefully, to achieve greater, you know, to reduce some collisions and whatnot. There's lots of people that don't realize what speed they're at when they're out driving, and they're not sort of half paying attention, and their cars start to drift. Well, if you've got this thing flashing in your face, I know it works for this guy when he's approaching the McKay Bridge and coming in Halifax. Lots of times, and particularly because you're changing speed zones there as well, right? But that, so hopefully that's what that's going to do, is adjust some of that, and maybe we'll, you know, some of the other collisions that we're going to avoid. Sometimes maybe we'll adjust driving habits overall, not just in that one specific area, and people will pay a little more attention just for a little bit, and then they're typically people's speeds will creep back up again. I think that's pretty.
I totally agree with that, and watching it. And I did see, I noticed out in Kedgy this summer, they have a lot of, they're on solar panels or whatever, and I'm pretty sure they must belong to them. I'm not sure how they do that there on those roads, but they're in the federal park. But is there any chance that we might see something more permanent? Because like you say, people slow down when they're there, but then they're gone.
Okay. If the region wanted to purchase some of those, like I know like the town of Lunenburg's got a permanent one installed by their hospital coming down Green Street in Lunenburg. I mean, if the region was interested in going down that path, I don't know how much they cost. Now, I did have an idea what they were worth, but I really can't remember now. But like I say, they become a permanent fixture, bolt them to a pole or whatever. And,
that's
but
not something. So I just wanted to touch a bit on the when we started this campaign, Councillor Frelick and ourselves, and started putting some signs around town to make people aware of slowing down in certain areas where there were cause. And I did send to you, and I know we've not followed up and had a meeting on that, but the outpouring from the community about speeding on their streets, and really it threw me for a loop too, because I didn't realize there was so many other people in the community that were concerned about and had speeders on their streets, and a lot of them were very, you know, side streets, small streets, you know, off the beaten track. So I was really, I mean, what did you think about that? I mean, all of the different comments and how many there were. There was like probably close to 100 people commenting on speeding in town.
What I can say is that the speed limit in the town, unless it's otherwise posted, is 50 kilometers an hour. And 50 kilometers an hour on most streets is plenty quick,
yeah,
right? But that is the speed limit. That's the provincial prima facie limit. I mean, irregardless of what's posted there. And typically, I think a lot of those streets, people are not exceeding 50 kilometers an hour, right? But that's, so they're within the speed limit. They may be driving too fast for conditions, but they're not exceeding the speed limit, right? And that's, I'm not sure what the mechanism is if you wanted to reduce, quote unquote, the speed in town, but I know that's usually not well received, I mean, from a traffic authority perspective, but I'm not an expert on that. I have to research that. But when I looked at some of the streets that people were speeding on, there's no way you could be over 50 kilometers on that street, right? But it certainly looks fast, might be fast, depending on some streets are narrow and whatnot, right?
Well, I must admit, I live on Park Street, and it's been really busy and a lot of traffic on there because of the detour, and there's a lot of speeding cars on that. And I've called several times and appreciated when members have been in the area and they've come by, and I've been encouraged other people to do it, and they've been pleased with a response when you're in the area. But I encourage everyone that I talk to call the police every time they see somebody speeding, because it may cause them to be able to pull them over at some other point in time and mention to them that someone reported them speeding, and see that's the same thing as seeing a radar on the street somewhere. It causes them to think about how fast that they've been driving, maybe slow them down and avoid an accident in the future. I just had one other comment.
Councilor Kelly, if I may.
Oh, sorry.
You're beyond your limit.
Okay.
I'm going to go to Deputy Mayor McLeod. I'll come back.
Yes, thanks.
A couple things. Getting back to the littering issues that we have ongoing. Is there any revenue money in an account that the RCMP could help with specific signage that really gets to the wording that is quite aggressive? Because there are certain areas that littering is really specifically heavy, and it usually happens in areas where people, like down at exit 18, for example, coming off there, people pull in and they drive. That's a mess. It's just like a garbage dump there. If there could be a big sign placed down there, we don't always have the revenue for that. We've kind of exhausted that. But if you folks can help with some kind of revenue for signage that makes a real strong message, one place, that is one place, and the other place is right across the Pentecostal Church, which I cleaned with my granddaughter about 3 weeks ago, and it doesn't look like we touched it today. And that's where people pull in, they sit, they have their meals, whatever, if they get from the fast food places. So I'm wondering whether you folks could help us in that regard.
Let me check on that.
Okay.
We have what's called the Mounted Police. It's not, it's an umbrella sort of, it's not us, but it's like volunteers, whatever, that they raise money in.
Okay.
For things. Yeah. I'm just not sure, I'm not certain it would apply, and I'm just not familiar enough.
Sure.
With it as I'm talking to you, so.
This is a community-based thing. If
yep.
We have community people out there volunteering to clean up the streets.
Well, I know that, like, say, Councillor Fancy and I have had some discussions, and he was trying to formulate to get a committee going.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, under that sort of thing, it may, but I'll have to make some inquiries.
And we've been working last spring, some staff here at the municipal office and myself met with the Divert Nova Scotia, which was the RRFB, the community person that, you know, community awareness guy. And we're going to be doing a program with the schools and having a recycled fair kind of thing, so that encourages people to reuse things, but we're also targeting on litter. And we'd like to, we're going to develop some kind of program, that an educational program, and have the take-home places be partners in that, the passing of things and that sort of thing, just to get the awareness more about littering.
Yep.
So we will be working on that in the next
Excellent.
Time.
And if you want to get a hold of Constable James when that, but I'll check on the Mounted Police Federation aspect of that,
mm-hmm.
and see if there's something that maybe.
And another question, just it's actually a follow up. We met with one of the officers, I can't remember whom, that they were going to move the 70-kilometer sign on Highway 8
yep.
up further away
yep.
from Pine Grove Park. That I don't believe that has been done yet.
That was me, and when I spoke with the Joe Kroll,
yes.
He said that he would
look after it. And my suggestion would be to move it up past Morton Street, because right around Morton Street is the bus stop,
right?
And that's that sharp turn.
Yes.
So if it was still 50 up to that past that point, then it should be positioned after the sharp turn going up the straight stretch.
After the sharp turn at
yep.
Morton Street.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll send him a follow up email.
Okay.
Any other councillor that hasn't spoken this morning on this issue? I'll go back to Councillor Kelly.
Thank you. I'm wondering what the conversations are happening right now in the RCMP world over the impending legalization of cannabis.
I'm not getting any direction right now. So I do know that it's being obviously discussed at our other levels, and I think in part of our problem will be is until it's the province adopts what their vision of things are, in some respects it's going to be challenging for us to do ours, so I really don't have much of an update right now on that for you, other than like say I know obviously it's part of active.
Is there currently somebody sitting at the table, though?
No, not from
not
our
from
level.
Not here, but from provincial
oh,
level,
yeah.
There are...
I would have to assume that our criminal operations section and our, call our federal and serious organized crime section would be at the table there, you know, with the province. Like, our management meets with the province on a weekly or bi-weekly basis with the... Department of Justice, and to discuss all the issues, and so I would have to think that that's on the table. But, I mean, we're not very far away from it, you know, and that's the.
There's no main point of contention or main point that anybody from the RCMP are currently advocating.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
So, and I mean, that will come down to the really the whatever we're directed to do.
Just one more quick one. We had discussed previously about you had, was it Joe Cole that you had in the traffic person to look at Cameron's Corner, what we call Cameron's Corner,
yep.
And it came back as if there was no real solution to
no.
that or anything that could be done to change that, but it was down to signage maybe.
You're talking at the intersection where you go up West Main
Street.
Street. Yeah. So when Mr. Kroll and I had our went for our drive to look at all the issues that were, and we had Brad Roeder with us as well. He had undertaken to show the signage to his signage people, for lack of better terms, to see if there was some recommendations. Since come back and said that they no longer are in that business. And so, that of making those recommendations or whatever. So, any recommendations or whatever would have to come from here within, and it would all be not that before it wasn't going to be on the Region of Queens expense, but I mean, as far as replacing any signage, but that's so that's where that would sit is that we're going to have to decide as a region, make some recommendations to, or you know.
Who does the recommendation go to?
No, well, that would go to the region or whoever wants to buy the signs. I mean, if you're asking me from my own personal point of view, because I'm not a sign expert, I think the signs need to say something to the effect of White Point or beaches, or anything like that to direct people, you know.
Or just bigger.
No, well, whatever. But what I'm saying is that I think that, you know, saying Yarmouth and Shelburne, I'm not too sure that people are, when they're here, are interested in Yarmouth or Shelburne. They're interested in where the beaches and White Point are.
But that's why I thought that was like a provincial thing.
Well, I think it probably was originally put there by the.
So right now, Region of Queens, if we want to change a sign, we're responsible for deciding what signage we need and putting it up and paying for it.
Right.
Just so I understand. Okay.
Thank you. Staff Sergeant Smith, do you have anything further to proceed
no,
with your presentation?
I don't think so. The only thing I can tell you right now is that we're on the books, we're surplus one member. That we have one member that's being transferred to federal and serious organized crime in the city. Her replacement is already here, and she hasn't been able to sell her house. So for that, her replacement's arrived from Newfoundland in the 1st of August. So for now, the Region of Queens is getting an extra member at no additional charge.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Any other council have a question?
Just have another question, if I
Thank
can.
You, Mayor.
And this is, I discussed this with the CAO the other day about permits at the skate park.
At what?
At the skate park. They're not mandatory at this point. It just suggests to wear a helmet. And I spoke to one of your officers, and I don't know how you can, if it was mandatory, you can't control it now because it's an elective thing. Anybody has the option of wearing or not wearing for their own safety. But and you can't manage that because it's not public property. But if it's public property in our own public property, can you control that if we put a mandatory helmet request?
I would think that we could certainly have some more engagement on that. I know when I policed in Chester, that we seized a lot of skateboards there. What we did in Chester, and I'm not saying that's what the region would want to do or what we would want to do either here, but when we found people were violating the helmet law, we took their skateboards for 30 days and then made them come back with their folks to get their skateboard back. And that, to some extent, had a great deal of success. I think some people have heard me say that one of our, my counterpart at the time, he got a call from a very upset parent that this was now the fourth time that we had seized his kid's skateboard, and he was going to have to keep him out of school so he could take him to Halifax to buy him another skateboard because we had his skateboard. You know, that's the reality of, you know, I mean, we gave people, if you were from outside the area, basically an option. Generally speaking, we took the skateboard. But if you were from the outside the area, because at the time the Chester Park was a, you know, pretty fantastic, pretty new in the whole nine yards, so we had people coming from Cape Breton to use it, and if they chose not to wear their skateboard, we would offer them a ticket versus having to drive back from Cape Breton to and let them pick their poison, for lack of better terms.
So Staff Sergeant, if I may ask you for a point of clarification, is there presently a provincial legislative law that requires skateboards to wear helmets?
There is under the Motor Vehicle Act, so the question would come down to, but that's under the Motor Vehicle Act that you're required to wear it. And I'm not sure in the skateboard park itself where that would fit in that. That's sort of what we were between that and I think there was a bylaw in Chester at the time. I'm going back 7 or 8 years now, so I.
But that's something we can have a follow up on.
Yeah.
Deputy Mayor, did you have a follow up question?
Well, I was just going to ask, at the present time with the situation, Jennifer, maybe you can help me with this. If there was an accident, if there was an incident, and then someone, are we protected for under liability or whatever with our insurance for that?
Jennifer?
We typically use the skate park at your own risk, and we recommend that you wear a helmet, but no, we don't enforce that you wear a helmet. So we would not be liable for
no waivers or anything like that from users or anything like that was required.
No, see, you use the park at your own risk, which is why there's very specific wording on the signage at the skate park. So you're voluntarily using the park at your own risk. We would prefer that you wear safety equipment, but we don't require you to wear safety equipment in order to use the park. You don't want to be telling what you exactly what to do and how to do it, you know, that kind of thing. We want
free reign, but safety
possible.
Is the key here.
Yeah,
so I mean, you're going to have an incident possibly down the road that you wish you'd done something.
And as we've mentioned before, a lot of the younger skateboarders take it upon themselves to scold the older when they're not wearing their helmet to reach their superior. So they do tend to rather well, you know, kind of police themselves.
Enforce themselves, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
Thank you.
Councilor Crowe?
So what are we doing at the present time with the skateboarders that are going to the park and leaving the park and that aren't wearing a helmet?
They are subject to us having a discussion with them. We could write them a ticket. We could seize their skateboard. I don't think we've seized any. It would be my hope that one of my... and we tried to get into this a little bit in the spring. Which doesn't only encompass that, but also encompasses bicycles. We have a lot of people here that don't seem to wear helmets on their bicycles. And, you know, and obviously, that's the law, particularly when you're on the roads. Not that the helmets aren't the same, you know, on skateboards aren't the same. And so we have had members have those discussions with people. We're not, trying to be too heavy-handed, but we are trying to do that. I know that Rob James has had some campaigns in the school, and when he has his bike rodeos, to try to reinforce those points. So
are you saying that we haven't issued any tickets?
I don't think we've written any for bicycles. For helmets. I don't think we've written any. I might be wrong in that, but I don't think so. If we did, it would only be one.
So basically, we have a law that not everyone's paying attention to. We're not enforcing it. We're supporting it by not asking.
Well, we are enforcing it to the extent that.
We have a skateboard park where we don't follow up on it and make them wear. It's not mandatory. So we're a whole community where children are at risk by not wearing helmets. That's a law.
As far as the outside the skateboard park, like on the roads in the town, yes, they're absolutely. Should be wearing helmets. A lot of the kids are wearing them. It's not necessarily the younger kids. It's the ones that are sort of a little above that. They have been approached by our members and spoken to. But we tend not to start with a ticket. We tend to start with a discussion with people first. And not that we sometimes can't move right to a ticket, but it's our hope that through discussions that we can change people's behavior, and obviously sometimes you can't. There's no question about that. Some people are going to keep doing what they're going to keep doing, and they'll just snub their nose at us after we leave, and we understand that. We're not interested in writing tickets or if we can change behavior in another manner or fashion.
Councilor Fancy.
I like that idea of taking their skateboard for 30 days. But if you want to hit them hard, that's where you. I always found when I was coaching basketball, if you put them on the bench, they learned the lesson. You could say all you wanted to do and do everything else, but when they weren't playing, they came around to what you wanted to do, because if they can't use it, then they're it's a problem. I thought one family goes to our church, their son comes up and goes out skateboarding every time, and he never wears a helmet. I think it was a week ago, he fell and he took 3 stitches on his head. We're one accident away from having a major accident there, because people, I always call it like that 13 to 16 year olds who want to look cool, the helmet doesn't look good, and especially, if you girls around and you're a guy and stuff like that. So, but I would like to think that we would be very supportive of you with going forward. Not always just a discussion. If you pull a couple of them, the rest of them will understand that this is going to be the way it's going to be. Because discussions, nothing happens, it really doesn't affect a lot.
And let me just say this about skate park. Like, I mean, from my own personal perspective, like, I marvel at what they can do with a skate park.
Yeah.
I just absolutely marvel. I sit there and I just in amazement, because I know somebody sitting in this room right now couldn't do it and could never have done it. So they defy gravity, they defy physics, they defy a whole lot of things. And like I say, the provision of the Motor Vehicle Act is to seize for up to 30 days, and that's what we were doing on a in Chester on a routine basis. And we had a whole room full of skateboards on a consistent basis. I mean, and that was to their advantage or disadvantage. There was a Tim Hortons right beside there when our members were going to get their coffee. Well, every time they're going to get a coffee, there was, you know, they were making that stop too, and, which we don't want to do. Like, let's make no mistake about it, that's not our goal. I mean, we'd rather kids or the users of the facilities use it and enjoy it, and us just to stand there with our jaws dropped thinking, wow, right? That's the soul. But let's say, just because we don't write a ticket doesn't mean that we're not enforcing things. And I don't want people to think that we're turning blind eyes to things. And like I say, our hope is through some discussions here and there that we can change people's behaviors.
Thank you, Councillors. And thank you, Staff Sergeant Smith, for your presentation today. Very
thank you.
Now move on to 4.0, tabling of petitions. Are there any petitions to table today? Second call for petitions. Third and final call for petitions today. Hearing none, we will now move on to 5.0, public question and comment session. And I would ask that any member of the public gallery please state your name, your address, and limit your comments to 5 minutes or less.
I wasn't able to be here for your community hall meeting last week. I was discussing the goals of the region of Queens, your sustainability and planning strategy, and your review of that. And I noticed one of your first priorities there was to do with the housing needs of the residents of Queens County, including affordable housing, high-end condominiums and so on, and senior housing. And also, I think it should be in there.
thinking, if you should decide, we know all the problems with buildings, the lack of storage, because they're all crowded and they're together. If you do consider shutting down the building, we are hopeful that you will help us find agreeable and adequate space. It is not necessary that we all move together. We could be separated, although it's been a huge benefit to me at the Learning Network, because not only do we teach adult upgrading, but we also have a partnership with the Family Resource Center for a family literacy program. I have a partnership with the Native Council Office for a family literacy program. All of my clients, because the Learning Network is for adults who left school, most of them in elementary school, certainly before high school, so they don't fit in the adult high school. So they have very low incomes or no incomes. So they're huge users of the food bank. So it has been beneficial for us to be with the other organizations, but not technically necessary. Again, very appreciative of all the support you've given us over the year. I know when I started about 15 years ago, I was given statistics, which have probably changed, hopefully they've changed over the years, that 50% of the adults in Queens County do not have high school education. Therefore, the low salary rate. And because we do increase their education and hopefully send them on to find work and become contributors to the community. Also, in the social services map of 2 or 3 years ago, Queens County was second only to the municipality of Cape Breton in the number of people per capita on social assistance. Therefore, the needs of food bank, services, the Family Resource Center, the free services of education and programs are all free. Provided money provided by the Department of funding is provided by the Department of Labor, because our concern is basically to get adults out and wage. That being said, if you found a space, the Department of Labor would probably be much more inclined to increase my budget, which is very small. If the space I was given was close to a career center, which unfortunately ours has been cut back to only a satellite office, or they might even consider like next door to a call center, which would be a close proximity to a job we might be able to go to. The only other requirements we have, as I say, are lots of space. I would need 2 classrooms, an office, facilities, 2 kitchen, our stove would be great. I use the Family Resource Centers now, because in the past year we had a wellness grant from the Department of Health to teach about healthy eating. We were cooking once a week. A 60-year-old lady who said she never baked before in her life. So those things are all positives, just to keep in mind. Lots of outlets, because we're huge into technology teaching. Prepare them for jobs before St. Dave's or truck. So charging up those computers. So before I run out, I just wanted to express that. Thank you.
Thank you, and I, at this time, I should state that all of the tenants at the former Mount Pleasant School are very valuable to the region of Queens and its citizens and provide valuable services. So all of those issues will weigh on any future decision that councilors will make, and do appreciate your comments this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak this morning? Okay. Hearing nothing. In addition, I will move on now to 6.0, approval of minutes, 6.1, regular council minutes for September 12th, 2017. Are there any errors or omissions in the minutes? A motion for acceptance of the minutes would be in order. Moved by Councillor Fancy, seconded by Councillor Muse. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? 7.0, dangerous and unsightly premises, under 7.1. We do have a location. Bylaw enforcement officer Kellyanne Hurley will come forward and brief us on this. I would ask Deputy Mayor McLeod to take the lead on 7.1 at this time.
I certainly will, Bishop. I recommend that the Region of Queens Council declare the property located at 1056 Long Cove Road in Port Medway, Queens County, Nova Scotia, as dangerous and unsightly as defined in the Municipal Government Act of Nova Scotia, and that the Region of Queens Council cause an order to be served upon the owners of the property located at 1056 Long Cove Road, Port Medway, Queens County, Nova Scotia, requiring that within 7 days of the date of the service of the order, the following work be carried out. 1. Demolition of wooden framed structure and attached apartment units. 2. Demolition of two outbuildings. 3. Leveling of properties. 4. Removal of wharf decking. 5. Removal of wooden supports attached to piles if required above the high water mark. 6. Removal of all solid waste items such as creosote timbers, piles of remnant lumber, plastics, lobster traps, and other miscellaneous items surrounding the dwellings. And 7. Source separation of construction and demolition materials and delivery to the Region of Queens landfill. And that, if the owner fails to comply with the order, the administrator may cause the requirements of the order to be carried out and all expenses incurred by the Region of Queens municipality become the responsibility of the owners.
A seconder to that motion? Councilor Muse? Kellyanne, would you like to brief us on this document?
Sure. 1056 Long Cove Road, lot number 7, Port Medway, Queens County, Nova Scotia. PID number 7009-2986. Assessed owner, Barry Maurice Levy, deceased. The noted property is in a very serious state of disrepair. The structures are dangerous and pose an immediate threat to the public safety. The offending property hosts a very large warehouse type storage building with an attached bachelor apartment on the second level and an attached freezer unit on the ground floor level. The insulated storage building, which once stored fishing supplies and equipment, is comprised of a wooden framed structure bearing a metal roof, which has since come attached and is blowing in the wind. The attached freezer unit on the second floor apartment has been compromised due to excessive water running inside, due to a serious shift in the roof and what appears to be a substantial hole also in the roof. The structural integrity of both units has been compromised by the deterioration of wooden sills and wooden stud walls, therefore the extreme tilt towards the open water. With the upcoming winter season and the risk of extreme winds along with possible snow loads, the dwellings could potentially collapse and fall into the ocean at Long Cove. The once attached wharf decking has been compromised due to the environmental conditions and the significant deterioration of the structure. The wharf decking is constructed with wooden planking spiked to wooden lateral supports, which are attached to piles anchored below the high water mark and into the ocean floor. As you will witness in the photographs, the wharf decking has rotted, causing holes, and has separated from the building. The two outbuildings located on the land side at the rear of the storage facility were once used for storage and are constructed of wood. Due to a lack of maintenance, the two buildings have deteriorated to a state and the structural integrity has been compromised and demolition is recommended. Upon receiving several formal complaints regarding the offending property, investigations reveal that the property owner, Barry Levy, is now deceased, and to my knowledge, there is no vested interest in the property today. And I don't believe there's anyone here today that has taken a vested interest in the offending property. The property has been left for 3 years without any maintenance at all. Protocol was completed to notify the vested interest in the property on August 15th, 2017, via registered mail and by posting the property on this very same date. No interest was received whatsoever, with the exception of numerous complaints. I would like to add that there is a strong concern about the current state of the property and the potential impacts on the delicate ecology of Long Cove. As some may know, the south side of the cove is under the protection of the Nova Scotia Nature Trust. Should a storm or heavy snow conditions occur, the nature of this of the north side of this property could very well pose an imminent risk to the cove and its ecology. A concern that a fire situation may present itself, not to mention the already stated risks to personal safety to those who choose to explore the area, are always anticipated liabilities when properties are allowed to reach this level of disrepair. I will show you a few photographs of the property, and you will get to actually view. As you see, you can see the lien on the main building at the rear, and I will show you there is an attached apartment unit, and that is actually leaning towards the waterway. Again, just a clearer photo. You can see the metal roofing that's hanging from the roof of the building, and since the initial investigation, several broken windows due to a shift in the building and heavy winds. Again, just another photograph of the building. Side photograph depicting the civic number 1056 Long Cove. You can see the attached wharf. The crib beneath the wharf is in what considers to be a very solid structure, but the decking itself has deteriorated substantially. Creosote timbers, which will, if given the opportunity to get my recommendation for demolition today, will be removed and accepted at our Region of Queens landfill. Again, we can see the shift in the building, the lean. I mean, the structural integrity is everything, and you see that it has been compromised. To the right of the warehouse, you can see the attached apartment unit, and below that is a freezer unit, which was once a freezer unit. The stairs accessing the apartment unit are very structurally unsound at this stage in the game. You can see the tilt on the poles where the building has again shifted, just trying to depict the structural integrity and how it has deteriorated. There's the wharf decking, as you see. It's in very poor shape. The holes in the decking. And it's amazing to watch the deterioration over a period of just a few weeks with all of the heavy rains and winds that we've had. Creosote timbers that will indeed be removed. And you can see one of two oak buildings, and there they are. That's land side at the rear of the building.
Any questions of councilors? Councilor Kelly?
So I just want to understand, it's vacant, right? There's nobody living in that apartment, nobody using that property.
It's been vacant for over 3 years.
Okay.
Yes.
And did the this person was deceased at least 3 years ago? Has it been since the person was deceased that it went like this? Nobody was taking care of it.
To my understanding, there's been no maintenance whatsoever for 3 years or more, but the building was slowly deteriorating, yes.
But we're dealing with the person who's managing the estate of this person who's deceased?
We're dealing with no one. The property owner is deceased, and there's no other vested interest in the property at this stage in the game.
So there's nobody to ask to, who would we be asking to make these changes to this property?
Changes?
Or these, or?
The request for demolition?
The request for demolition, yes.
We would normally ask the property owner, and of course we're not receiving compliance because the property owner is deceased.
Right, okay.
and there's no vested interest. So because of that, we follow protocol and.
Serving the owners of the property, so you're serving this to the owners of the property, which is the estate, which would be what, the lawyers or something, or?
No, to the estate itself, to the last known address, which is what we do via registered mail, and we post the property.
But there's, okay, I'm missing something, the person's dead, right?
The person is deceased.
There's nobody else handling this property, so who are we, we're sending it to an address?
There's one son that is deceased, and there's an estranged ex-wife that has no vested interest in the property.
This is just a formality that we're saying that we're sending this to the owners of the property?
Yes, this is protocol as per the Municipal Government Act, Province of Nova Scotia.
Okay.
Any other counselor? Any further discussion on the issue? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of the motion? Is your hand, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, Ellen. We will move on to 8.0, economic development, we have nothing under that today. 9.